Turn with me to page 920 of your pew Bibles. Page 920. We'll be starting at the very last verse of chapter 1 and then reading this great poetic section of Jonah chapter 2. Jonah chapter 1, starting at verse 17. Hear God's word for me and for you. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. Notice it's only after. He's in a big predicament that Jonah decides to pray. I can never imagine doing such a thing, right? Only after I've caused a big predicament in my life. Then I decide to pray. Can you relate to Jonah at all? Am I the only one? Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep and into the heart of the seas, and the floods surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall again look upon your holy temple. How far did that prayer have to travel from the belly of the fish, way down in the deep of the ocean, to reach God's holy temple? He says, the waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped about my head at the roots of the mountain. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord. And my prayer came to you and to your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. The Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon dry land. Jonah is in a helpless and hopeless situation. How does he respond? How do you respond when you are in a dark and hopeless situation? What are the ruts that are carved deep into your soul that either help or hinder your spiritual formation during stressful times? Where can we go and meet with the Lord? Jonah is like unlike any prophet in the Old Testament. He receives a rather unique and remarkable calling from the Lord. But Jonah not only decides not to go to Nineveh, he disobeys in the most spectacular way imaginable. Jonah's type of disobedience is not being pulled over for going 31 miles per hour on the 25 mile per hour side streets of Sally Beach. Jonah's type of disobedience is getting pulled over with a stolen Mercedes with drugs and guns in the back of the trunk, right? You do not stumble into this type of radical disobedience. And so in many respects, there is a genuine playfulness in the text of Jonah that invites you to laugh at Jonah. And the big fish in the tale is only the tip of the iceberg. What are we to make of a prophet who refuses to prophesy? Or what about a doctor who refuses to heal? Or a lawyer who refuses to sue the doctor who refuses to heal? These things that don't make any sense to us, right? And so in very many respects, Jonah is what I would call an anti-prophet type. In fact, Jonah represents both an anti-Moses figure and an anti-Elijah figure, both of which represent the early prophetic tradition in the Old Testament. Let me get in the weeds of the text a bit this morning, and I think the payoff is significant for us. First, Jonah is an anti-Moses type. You might remember Moses. How many times... Now I'm sounding like a father, right? How many times did Moses have to do the Ten Commandment thing, right? Can you imagine God saying, what? I already wrote it for you. I already told you. You don't listen. What did Moses find after he's coming and making the trek down Mount Sinai? Right? He's whistling. He has joy in his heart. He's just seen God. He's had a theophany, what we call an encounter with the living God. And so he's going, and what does his brother, his great brother, his sibling do? They make a golden calf. All the people of God are bowing before the golden calf, saying, this is the God that brought us out of Egypt. And so what does Moses do? He has a divinely ordained temper tantrum. This is not a temper tantrum like you and I throw. This is divinely orchestrated. He has God's backing. He throws the two tablets down, bursting the Ten Commandments. And then it's like this moment where God is going to say, my anger is burning against them. They deserve judgment. I might just start over with you, Moses, just like I started over with Noah. And so in that moment, what does Moses do? He begins to plead with God on behalf of this evil people. And in verse 34, there is this great line that is sort of iconic, is sort of famous in the Hebrew mindset. It says this. That's Moses. It says in chapter 34, the Lord passed before Moses and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Jonah also echoes this sentiment. He too had found the people of Nineveh doing evil. But instead of pleading for mercy, Jonah wants to see God's judgment, right? And so the text of Jonah harkens back to this Moses text, but in an ironic, playful manner. What does God do? He doesn't send judgment. And this is what Jonah says in chapter 4. This is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish. For I know that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, Yahweh, relenting from disaster. And so from Moses, this description of God is praiseworthy. But for Jonah, the same description of God is a cause for scorn and anger. Moses is the agent that pleads with God for a second chance. Jonah is the agent who is angry with God for giving the Ninevites a second chance. Moses asks that mercy may win out over judgment. Jonah is angry that judgment does not triumph over mercy. And so in very many respects, Jonah is an anti-Moses figure. He represents the anti-prophet type of the Old Testament. So too, there are many ironic details in the life of ministry of Elijah the prophet that allows us to poke fun at this figure, Jonah. Both Elijah and Jonah sit down under a desert plant after a day's journey. Both receive a message from God under the plant. And so you're thinking, who else in the whole Bible receives a word from the Lord sitting under a plant? Well, just Elijah and Jonah. Both ask that they may die sitting under a plant. And so the narrative of Jonah harkens back to all these particularities in the ministry of Elijah. You might remember Elijah's depression after the victory over the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. He gets depressed and he says this. That's Elijah up there. But he said, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, it is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers. And he lay down and slept under a broom tree, presumably to die. A big pity party. And so too, Jonah pleads for his God to take his life. And it says, and now the Lord God appointed a plant, made it come up over Jonah, and he asked that he might die, and said, it is better for me to die than to live. And so, in many respects, Jonah represents very much the opposite of the prophetic hero tradition in the Old Testament. And perhaps most importantly, Moses and Elijah had their quintessential meeting with God. We call this a theophany, an appearance of God. Where? On the mountain. Moses at the top of Mount Sinai. Elijah on the top of Mount Carmel. So too, we often speak of mountaintop experiences. Going on a retreat, we have a spiritual experience. Even Jesus, in the book of Matthew, he gives his most famous sermon, where? On the Mount, Sermon on the Mount. His most famous commission, where? The Great Commission on the mountainside. If you know anything about the growth, the spectacular growth of Christianity in South Korea over the last century, you know that one of the defining characteristics of South Korean Christianity is that folks will go up on the mountains that dot the landscape of South Korea. They will go up on a mountain to be and meet with God. One of the defining characteristics of Christianity in South Korea. Something about having a mountaintop experience, something about being a little closer on the mountain, getting away from it all, that puts us in a great frame of mind to really meet with God. But Jonah's encounter doesn't come on the mountain. Far from it. There's a playfulness in the text of Jonah. Jonah is going down, down, down. And so what's the first word that he says? Arise, Jonah. Go to Nineveh. What does Jonah do? He went down to Joppa. They're sailors. They're and they're each calling out to his God. But Jonah had gone down to the inner part of the ship. Do you see where this is going? Arise, the sailors say. They sort of echo what God had already said. Arise, call out to your God. But where does Jonah end up? Down into the sea, hurled him into the sea. And so the descent of Jonah is not yet complete, because we know what happens in Jonah chapter 2. Jonah calls out from the belly of Sheol. For you cast me into the deep. The deep surrounded me. The weeds were wrapped about my head at the root of the mountains. If Moses and Elijah tell you that God meets with you on the mountain, Jonah tells you that God meets with you in the depth of despair, in the depth of trouble, in the depth of sin, in the depth of suffering. This is where Jonah experiences and encounters Yahweh most powerfully. I don't know about you, but for me, this is very good news. Jonah says, from the belly of Sheol I cried. Now, Sheol is frequently used in the Old Testament to describe the place of the dead. Jonah says he was at the root of the mountains, at the very depth of the sea. And the sea in the Hebrew mindset is often synonymous with chaos and evil. So at the very furthest from the love and care of God, both geographically and spiritually speaking, this is where Jonah meets with Yahweh. I cried out to the Lord out of my distress, and He answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and You heard my voice. What a powerful reminder. God answered Jonah. God heard his voice, not on the mountain top of victory, but in the depth of despair, of sin, of suffering, the feeling of being forsaken. God is not a God of the mountains only. God is a God of the deep. God who rules over Sheol. God who hears from the depth of the sea and even in the belly of a fish. I don't know about you, but there are plenty of times when I don't easily resonate with Moses. There are plenty of times when I don't easily resonate with Elijah, their experiences with God on the top of the mountain. I would dare say that there are more times when we better resonate with the Jonah experience, who nevertheless meets with God, experiences the living God in the depth of his confusion, the depth of his suffering, and the depth of his disobedience. Anthony Carter puts it like this. He says, you didn't pray before the trouble. You didn't pray while creating the problem. But now that you've created a huge mess, all of a sudden you want to call out to God. Then he says, yet it is a testimony to God's goodness and grace that He answers prayers that are after the fact of our disobedience. Isn't that very profound? It's a testimony to God's grace and goodness that God hears and listens to Jonah after Jonah had made a mess of his own life, after Jonah had run away, after Jonah got busted with a stolen Mercedes and drugs and guns in the back of his truck, right? This is Jonah. He cries out to God, but only after his disobedience, only after being in the worst situation imaginable. And so I would say it's not amazing that sinners pray in distressing moments. What is amazing is that God delights to answer these prayers of these rebellious sinners. That's the amazing part of Jonah chapter 2. And so the question is, are you going through a hard time? The message of Jonah tells you, you never sink so low in life where God's steadfast love and mercy cannot meet with you. Jonah is the prophet who really confirms the adage, you'll never know that God is all you need till God is all you got. So Jonah is at the bottom of the human experience. Tim Keller, in his book on Jonah, has a great line. He says, it's not just being at the bottom that begins to change Jonah, but prayer at the bottom. Jonah prays a very interesting prayer at the bottom of the human experience. Jonah is in a unique and very remarkable situation. And just like us, right? We get ourselves into very unique and remarkable situations, often of our own doing. But the prayer he prays from the belly of the fish is utterly unremarkable and very unoriginal. You would think unique situation, remarkable circumstance would require a unique prayer and a remarkable prayer, that he's crying out in this desperate situation. But it's not so. Why? Because the form in which he prays, and even down to the words that he chooses to use, all come from prayers in the book of the Psalms. One commentator even says, and goes so far as to say this, not a word in the prayer is original. Jonah got every word, lock, stock, and barrel, out of the Psalms book. And so Jonah prays with a stock vocabulary that comes straight from the book of the Psalms. Look at this with me a bit. Jonah, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and He answered me. Well, that's echoing Psalm 120. In my distress, I called to the Lord, and He answered me. He said, all your waves and your billows passed over me. Psalm 42, deep calls to deep, and all your breakers and your waves have gone over me. Jonah says, I said, I am driven away from your sight. Is this a unique experience to Jonah? Or is there a prayer book for Israel that he can draw upon, even in the most desperate of situations? Then I said in my alarm, I'm cut off from your sight. Yet you brought me up from my life from the pit, O Lord my God. Look at Psalm chapter 30. O Lord, you have brought up my soul from Sheol, among those who go down to the pit. And finally, to close this great poem, salvation belongs to the Lord. Where had Jonah heard that? Psalm 3 and other places in the Psalter, salvation belongs to the Lord. There's other vocabulary in Jonah 2 that's borrowed from the Psalms. Upon thy holy temple, the waters closed in over me. My soul fainted within me. Most, if not all, of the vocabulary of Jonah during this most remarkable situation in his life is borrowed from the book of the Psalms. You see, St. Augustine called the Psalms a school. St. Ambrose called the Psalms a gymnasium. So whether a school or a gymnasium, the Psalms are the place we go to learn spiritual reactions to the circumstances of life. You experience the death of a loved one. You're diagnosed with cancer. You're in the midst of a depression. You experience divorce or estrangement from family. Where do you go? And where have you gone to school to help you respond in the way of the Lord? Jonah's soul had been trained in the way of the Psalms. He cries out not in a spontaneous, self-absorbed manner, but with a God-given language that had formed his soul in the Psalms. Eugene Peterson tells a story about his own, his son that teaches English lit. And they're teaching writing, and the first sort of 19-year-old college freshman, super self-absorbed. Sorry, college student. Write about your own experience. All these college students are just writing about their own internal angst. They've experienced 19 years of life. And Eugene Peterson says his son gets reading all these essays, totally self-absorbed, their own things, their own dilemmas, their own sort of angst, right where they are in life. He says the next time, he says, let me change this up. He takes them to a cemetery. All these 19-year-old college freshmen. Look around. Imagine what happened to these people here. Write their story. Suddenly begins to be more reflective, a deeper sort of form of writing. Jonah's soul had been trained in the way of the Psalms. It's much like these college freshmen going to the cemetery. They learned a vocabulary that expanded their horizon. Jonah cries out not in a spontaneous, self-absorbed manner, but with a God-given language that had formed his soul from the book of the Psalms. Jonah knew how to respond in this very overwhelming situation because his life had been saturated with the Psalms. Eugene Peterson goes on to say this, prayer, which we often suppose is truest when most spontaneous, the raw expression of our human condition without contrivance or artifice, shows up in Jonah when he is in the rawest condition imaginable as learned. This response of Jonah in prayer, praying the Psalms, is a remarkable response to his unimaginable condition. He prays the Psalms when he is most out of sync with his self. He prays the Psalms when he is most out of sync with his calling. The Psalms had dug a deep well in Jonah's soul, and this well waters the soul of Jonah and glorifies God during the most trying season of Jonah's life. And so the application to us today is rather obvious, is it not? How much have I sown the word deep into my life? How much have I trained my soul in the school of the Psalms? That when I have no words to express, that when language defies my use, that when my prayers all dry up, that when my hope is gone, that there still is a God-given language reverberating around in my soul, these God-given prayers that water my soul during the most distressing and stressful times of life. There are lots of times when my words end, when my prayers end, where my human hope comes to an end. This is when you draw upon the Word. This is when you draw upon, you've placed yourself in the school of the Psalms. And so Jonah uses the language of the Psalms. But the form he uses in prayer is perhaps even more remarkable. It's not remarkable that someone prays in the midst of trouble. We all tend to pray in the midst of trouble. But the way Jonah prays in this situation is very, very remarkable. Would it surprise you to know that the most common psalm available to Jonah is a psalm of lament? And that is, if you read the book of Psalms from cover to cover, 150 psalms, as Jonah must have done countless times, the form that would have most impressed upon Jonah's soul would have been the psalm of lament. And so, there is more laments then there are psalms of praise and thanksgiving. And so try to figure this out. Jonah is in the belly of the fish, feeling forsaken, circumstances dire. What kind of psalm would you expect Jonah to pray? A lament. All the circumstances, all his feelings dictated lament. Yet, Jonah prays a psalm of praise in the standard thanksgiving form. Jonah 2 follows the typical thanksgiving archetype, flowing from introduction to lament to appeal and proclamation to testimonial and finally to thanksgiving and vow. Jonah prays a psalm of praise and thanksgiving, not after the ordeal is over, but in the very midst of his plight. He prays at variance with his circumstance. Circumstances called for lament. Jonah prays thanksgiving. Why do you think he does that? I wonder why Jonah prays a prayer of thanksgiving when all the circumstances around him call for a lament. Does prayer hold out the possibility of subverting your circumstances? Does the very nature of thanksgiving hold out the possibility of subverting your situation? I saw this countless times during our years in Africa. A family loses a child. Family is surrounded by multiple people in their family with malaria. A grinding poverty. A house gets burned down. There is no humanly possible reason why these families should be thankful. Why these families should be praising God. Yet, I saw it time and time again. African Christians, Christians in Equatorial Guinea, praising God even despite all of their circumstances. There was something about praise. There was something about thanksgiving that worked to subvert their very dire circumstances. And so too, you and I, we're called to pray at times at variance with our situation. Think about your Christian duty, even in the midst of your family. A situation that calls for anger as a parent, as a spouse. But as a Christian, you choose to respond with graciousness. Circumstance calls for despair. Your loved one, your husband, your wife, maybe you yourself, in a big depression. As a Christian, I want to respond with hope and thanksgiving. You see, the situation of Jonah calls for deep lament, and there is biblical precedent that this would have been completely warranted for Jonah. There's something good about lament. That's another sermon. Yet he prays a psalm of thanksgiving right in the midst of his trouble. Church, what does that tell you about the power of praise? What does that tell you about the power of thanksgiving in the midst of trouble, in the midst of difficult circumstances, in the midst of depression? What does it tell you about the power of corporate worship, of year after year, of Sunday after Sunday, bringing yourself, bringing your children to worship to form godly, deep, spiritual ruts in your soul? Why? Because one day you're going to be in a dark place. You're going to have to call upon and use a language from corporate worship. You're going to have to call upon and use language from your spiritual disciplines, from being in the Word, when your own words run out, when your own hope runs out, when your own prayers run out. Do you have enough in the bank? Have you been in the school of Psalms enough to draw upon this shared godly prayers that come from the book of the Psalms?